Coming up on your Thursday, join us as we have Air Cascadia at 10 o'clock, bringing news, views, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And then at 10:15, we'll be hearing Flashpoints Investigative News Journalism with our host, Dennis Bernstein. Today, we'll hear about protests against the Obama administration's drone assassination program. Plus, we'll report on how marijuana is turning into a big business in the United States. At 11 today on Between the Covers, we'll speak with award-winning science fiction writer Brian Evanson, author of the new thriller, A Collapse of Horses. But coming right up, it is Press Watch with our hostess, Teresa Mitchell. Get all the news you're not supposed to know, and then some. And that's coming up next, right here on The Boo.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Problem with Privilege, a four-week class hosted by the Portland Underground Grad School starting April 4th at 6:30 p.m. This class is for those who want to name and correct liberal racism, who want to understand and interrupt isms, and who want to be a powerful ally and take on race issues and white fragility without co-opting the issues. Again, that's The Problem with Privilege, a four-week class hosted by the Portland Underground Grad School starting April 4th at 6:30 p.m. at Hatch, 2420 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. Information on how to register for the class and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. You're going to want to stay tuned because in just a couple of minutes, I'm going to have Richard Gage AIA featured in a new film, Firefighters, Architects, and Engineers Expose 9/11 Myths. He'll be having a presentation and film at PSU Lincoln Hall this Saturday, the 2nd at 7 p.m. And I'm very glad that I'm going to be able to talk to him. First, I want to give you just a couple of headlines. And I want to start off with some meta news. I've been crunching news. I've been criticizing the press, looking for propaganda and exposing it where I can. For 30 years now, this is actually the 30th year since I began broadcasting Press Watch at the little bitty KAZI studios on Sunday mornings in Austin, Texas. And I sometimes... just get a feeling that something's in the works. And I call that kind of meta news. So I want to lay that on you. And right now, my opinion is that looking at Senator Sam Nunn and the talking heads on Fox News and the pro-imperial stuff on NPR, I call them National Pentagon Radio, I would say right now we are experiencing another propaganda Psywar preparation, and this is for a new major false flag attack, something to truly shock you on the nature of 9/11, possibly with a radiological component. Don't know how, where, or when this is going to come down, but I would say the move is being telegraphed, and it's quite possible that some bomb is being set up now. And a let-it-happen-on-purpose attack or a set-it-up-on-purpose attack, I'm not sure exactly what sort it will be. We will need to resist this with all our might if we want to keep any shreds of a egalitarian society, because you recall just how fascistic we became, especially immediately after 9/11. I won't go into the details of that right now, but I will go into 9/11 shortly. As I said, I'll be talking to Richard Gage. But first, a couple of headlines. Monsanto's use of a toxic pesticide, glyphosate, has been linked to rampant kidney disease in farmers. And according to a Vice News article, the death toll has reached the tens of thousands. Glyphosate, commonly known as Roundup, is a weed killer that is made and used by Monsanto that can become highly toxic to one's kidneys when mixed with hard water. That's according to Neera Shastri of Vice News. This has been reported in Project Censored. Truthout published an article in February 2016 that says many as 40,000 Sri Lankan rice farmers and up to 37% of the population in villages in Sri Lanka are slowly and painfully dying from chronic kidney disease. The article cites research from California State University, Long Beach, that is highly supportive of the hypothesis there is a correlation between this kidney disease and the use of glyphosate. So you can find that at projectcensored.org. From the Los Angeles Times, in an article on the 27th by Boulos, Hennigan, and Bennett, Syrian militias armed by different parts of the U.S. war machine have begun to fight each other on the plains between the besieged city of Aleppo and the Turkish border, highlighting how little control U.S. intelligence officers and military planners have over the groups they have financed and trained in the bitter five-year-old civil war. The fighting has intensified over the last 2 months as CIA-armed units versus Pentagon-armed units have repeatedly shot at each other while maneuvering through contested territory on the northern outskirts of Aleppo. That's according to U.S. officials and rebel leaders. In mid-February, a CIA-armed militia called Fursan ul-Haq, or the Knights of Righteousness, was run out of the town of Maria, about 20 miles north of Aleppo, by Pentagon-backed Syrian Democratic Forces, moving in from Kurdish-controlled areas to the east. So that's just a taste of how crazy that situation has become. Well, now it's 9:06. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Press Watch. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and today I am pleased to be speaking with Richard Gage, AIA, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Richard, are you on the line?
I sure am, and thanks for having me, Teresa.
So glad you could join us on KBOO. Richard Gage, AIA, is a San Francisco Bay Area architect of 28 years, a member of the American Institute of Architects, that's where we get that AIA, and the founder and CEO of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, one of my favorite websites for finding out what really came down on that day. 15 years ago, Mr. Gage has worked on most types of building construction, including numerous fireproof steel-framed buildings. He really is a working, successful architect. Most recently, he worked on construction documents for a $400 million project with 1.2 million square feet of retail. And so he's a working architect of the first rank. Now, Richard, if you'll indulge me, I'm going to rattle off the official story, more or less, of the events in New York City on September 11th, 2001, and I got this from Wikipedia. A few sentences. The Twin Towers of the World Trade Center collapsed on September 11th, 2001, as a result of being struck by two jet airliners hijacked by 10 terrorists affiliated with Al-Qaeda during the September 11th attacks. Two of the four hijacked airliners crashed into the Twin Towers, one into the North Tower, one into the South Tower. The collapse of the Twin Towers destroyed the rest of the complex, and debris from the collapsing towers severely damaged or destroyed more than a dozen other adjacent and nearby structures. The South Tower collapsed at 9:59 a.m., and at 10:28 a.m., the North Tower collapsed. Later that day, 7 World Trade Center collapsed at 5:21 p.m. from fires that had started when the North Tower collapsed, end quote. Richard Gage, AIA, is that narrative essentially correct?
Well, those towers certainly did come down. There's lots of questions about what brought them down, and that's why we have almost 2,500 now architects and engineers demanding a new investigation. And I'm delighted to tell you today and your listeners what is the evidence that has caused such great alarm among the AE community.
Well, what motivated you to investigate the official claims about the events of September 11th, 2001?
Well, I was listening to yet another courageous radio station in the Bay Area, where I'm from, working on my way back from a construction observation that I was doing there. I heard from Bonnie Faulkner on KPFA's Guns and Butter program.
KPFA.
I was just shocked to hear David Ray Griffin, who's now written 10 books on this subject. He is he was discussing the oral histories, the secret testimony that was recorded and held by the city, but not released at all to the New York Times or anybody else. But the New York Times sued them, and finally, but they got this information. And all of a sudden, in August of 2005, we learn that there's 500 FDNY first responders, and over 120 of them are talking about hearing sounds of explosions, experiencing these explosions, seeing flashes of light in the building at the destruction, at the onset of the destruction of these two towers. It's extraordinary, this account, and I was blown away by this and the other information that he was citing, including the collapse of a third tower, World Trade Center Building 7, like you said, later that day at 5:20 in the afternoon. And it's an extraordinary place to start, because no plane even hit that skyscraper.
It was a skyscraper. It was 40-something towers, 40-something stories tall. It would really stick out in the skyline here in Portland.
Yeah, it's the tallest building in most of our states, in fact. But it was, not as tall as the Twin Towers, about half the height, actually. But an amazing event. Anyway, I was shocked. I went to the presentation that night, 10 years ago now, and I'm going, wow, something is seriously wrong here. Either this guy's lying, or the entire government and the U.S. media is lying about what we experienced this day. Well, what brought down these towers? And for 4 years, I had swallowed the official story hook, line, and sinker. And now I began to question it, put together the evidence on the Internet. It seems like you can only get the truth on the Internet, not from our mainstream media anymore. And I was shocked at how much they can keep from the American people, and how few radio stations there are in this country like KBOO, who has the courage and the programming and the talk show hosts like yourself, who have the resilience to go after the truth.
We've had Peter Ray Griffin on. Well, I've had Peter Ray Griffin on this program several times, and what you're saying, he has truly put together a very cogent account with a great number of details, and has been instrumental. What you're saying reminds me of this phenomenon. We tend to say that the secret has been kept, but more than a secret being kept, a population has been intimidated into believing what is not credible just on viewing with their own eyes. A population, and indeed the entire world, has accepted a post hoc, ergo propter hoc, fallacy regarding what is seen with airliners crashing and then buildings falling down. And this is a sophisticated and effective technique. And so I just want to say that I have heard over and over from people, and I must include myself to some degree, saw those buildings fall, got the official explanation, which seemed to be rather ready-made, and accepted it more or less, or felt that it wasn't important to challenge it. And then someone somewhere started pointing out things that could not be. And then it took, because of the weight of the intimidation, because of the power of propaganda, it took quite a sustained effort on my part for me to say a year or so later, No, this could not have happened. This official story absolutely physically cannot be. And so I've turned to Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, AE911truth.org, for the scientific details that allow me to say with absolute confidence that the official story cannot be true, not can't even be close to being, can't be even close to being true. And I say snarky things like, you know, F still equals MA. But it's the details that your people provide and that you have provided, and it's the assembly of those facts that absolutely devastate the official story. So I invite you to, let's just plow into it, shall we? Because 15 years later, not only is it still very relevant, but it's still very necessary to break the propaganda with the details.
That's right. And it's those details that I took to the 15 architects that I worked with at the time, about 10 years ago, and they thought I was nuts, actually, prior to this presentation, most of them.
And, isn't it bizarre to think of that now?
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. I believe that they thought you were nuts. And still, you know, and in hindsight, it's like, wow, how could we be taken in by this?
Yeah, it's amazing. It just turns your head. I bought them pizza. I made them come into a lunchtime presentation. I showed them 45 minutes of the evidence that we're going to go over, and that's available on our website and our DVDs and our 50-page booklet and our newspaper and our brochures. Every one of them were shocked at what they never learned, that what they never knew. In fact, most architects and engineers know nothing about the third worst structural failure in modern history, World Trade Center Building 7, and that's after the two Twin Towers. So it's just incredible. And like myself, until that day, didn't know that 47 stories dropped like a rock suddenly, symmetrically, at free fall acceleration, straight down into its own footprint the afternoon of 9/11, about 7 hours after the towers came down. No plane hit it. And after witnesses hear explosions, this building drops in the exact manner of a classic controlled demolition.
Could I interrupt you there and just ask you to define free fall? Free fall speed.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's falling as fast as a bowling ball would be falling off the side of the building.
With nothing under it.
Exactly. Yeah, no resistance. Now, this building has 40,000 tons of structural steel in it.
WTC-7.
Designed, yeah, it's five times stronger than it needs to be to keep this building up for its entire life, right? And so all of a sudden, every one of those 80 columns must have given way at once in order for this building to fall suddenly, symmetrically, at free fall, as fast as a bowling ball. Now, that's just incredible. And we've seen this, most of us, a half a dozen times at least on TV, like the old hotels in Las Vegas, when they systematically and in a synchronized manner set off thousands of explosives that are set on the columns and beams in the building to break them up into small pieces that are loadable on trucks and so forth. So we know exactly what brought this building down. Even a child can see it and say, oh, yeah, I saw that on TV. It's a controlled demolition. But 8 years later, NIST comes out with having juggled this hot potato for that long and says, oh, our computer models show us that this came down due to normal office fires. Now, normal office fires have never brought down a skyscraper ever. I mean, we have 100 examples of much hotter, longer lasting, and larger fires in these buildings, high rises, that have never, ever, before or since 9/11, brought any high rise down. So this is what we get the attention with of those architects who come by our booth at the national conventions and structural engineers also. We are very successful in showing them the Building 7, which drops in 7 seconds, and a third of its fall is in free fall. And that's what, when they say, what, you mean that came down on 9/11? And we go, yeah. And does it look like anything familiar to you? Yeah.
That's the bizarre quality of it. That's propaganda. Because basically, we saw a controlled detonation. We saw nothing but controlled detonations of those buildings. But the government came forth with the media and said, no, you saw the Easter Bunny.
Yes. Yeah, they actually do say this building came down due to normal office fires, which caused thermal expansion of beams on the 12th floor. That's their running hypothesis.
Thermal expansion. I mean, come on. Well, oh, no, wait. It magically transmuted into gallium.
Well, the building is fireproofed. These beams are not going to be expanding, first of all. For a whole other set of reasons, they're not expanding also. But even if they were to expand, and Les Nist claims, push this girder off of its seat on this particular column 79, you wouldn't have had the complete internal collapse near and around this column, and then vertically up the entire building, and then this collapse mechanism traveling laterally such that in about 10 seconds, the entire inside of the building is caved in on itself. And then we see the 7-second collapse overall. That's basically their theory. And none of that could have happened because you would have seen massive exterior deformation on the perimeter structure and breaking of granite panels and windows. I mean, it is really ludicrous what they put out. But because they basically kept it hidden and didn't show the for instance, the AIA, of which I'm a member, American Institute of Architects, and the ASCE members and structural engineers, it was not widely disseminated for others to study. In fact, their computer models, which they claim prove their theory, which actually disprove their theory, because they show the building actually beginning to tip over after 2 seconds, so they don't even let us see what happens in the final 5 seconds of that building's collapse in our computer model. They won't release the input data. The input data is how others verify your work. They say, well, we can't release that input data to you because it might jeopardize public safety.
It might jeopardize something. It might bring up the phrase GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. They certainly got garbage out, so it's obvious to see that they put garbage in.
And it's going to be jeopardizing public safety to withhold this valuable information from the architects or engineers who are tasked with ensuring the public safety in these buildings.
Well, there are so many details that are brought forth in your film. By the way, I have links, the same links that were sent to me. They are on the front page of KBOO.fm. If you click on Press Watch, it's 2 or 3 down the page. You will see Interview with Richard Gage, and then that gives you the full page, and it gives you the links, including Architects and Engineers Solving the Mystery of Building 7 with Ed Asner, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Let's see if I've got, I'm misspeaking. I've got some links on there anyway. And I don't think I have the link for the film that you will be showing with your presentation at PSU Lincoln Hall this Saturday at 7 p.m. But I do have some other links on there, so you can look at part of that. But let's return to what we were talking about there. And there's so many aspects of this that not only disprove the main story, but show beyond a doubt that a detonation took place. You have a list on ae911truth.org under news and evidence that has 10 pieces of key evidence. And I wonder if you could continue. Well, of course, I want you to continue on your own schedule or your own agenda there, but I wonder if you can bring up some more of those. The microspherules of the very high energy evidence, microspherules of iron, were very convincing to me.
It is convincing, and we've included that evidence, by the way, in the film, which we are showing, Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths. And your listeners can see the trailer for that film on YouTube. So just Google Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths trailer.
That's probably the best way to do it.
You mentioned Ed Asner. That's an extraordinary 15-minute documentary on World Trade Center Building 7, and it highlights many of the 40 high-rise architects, structural engineers, metallurgists, chemists, physicists, controlled demolition experts, all laying out the evidence for the explosive demolition of this building that we include in our landmark film, 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. So there's a lot going on, and that 15-minute film, in addition, if people can't make it or miss it somehow on your website, it's a website for itself called architects-engineers.org. And so what Eric Lawyer and I are going to be speaking about on Saturday night, Eric Lawyer is the firefighter who assembled 200 firefighters who have signed this petition calling for a new investigation and are providing a statement of support. And Eric Lawyer will be with me in Seattle.
And
in Portland,
he is actually a whistleblower who was a witness. And when people ask, where are the whistleblowers? Well, here's 200 of them. You know, if you can hear 200 whistles, this is significant.
And it really is.
And one of the things that they corroborate is the numerous eyewitness accounts of explosions. Could you give some details on that?
You bet. And we'll get back to those spherules, too, because
all right,
that's
yeah.
pretty damning evidence to the official story. But Eric Lawyer is going to be he's featured in the film because this is from firefighters to firefighters, and it's people are going to be blown away.
So to speak,
all your firefighter friends know, in addition to everybody else, to come see this film. But what the firefighters all heard, many more than were in those oral histories that we mentioned earlier, is that there's witnesses of explosions prior to Building 7 coming down, but particularly at the onset of the destruction of the Twin Towers. Now, what we're told in the case of the North Tower, for instance, because there's two towers and they were each hit at different location from the top down, 15 stories in the case of the North Tower, we're told that 15-story section after weakening of the steel by the fires, the top portion drives then down the rest of the building and then destroys itself. And what we see in all the videos, and what we're going to be talking about in this film that we're showing, is that this 15-story section is actually itself destroyed in the first 4 seconds. Actually, very similar to Building 7. It looks like a controlled demolition in this first phase of destruction.
I found that extraordinary, watching that film just last night, looking at that top 15 stories. Very obvious when you actually look at it with unbiased eyes that is pulverized first.
Yeah, and so there's nothing left to drive the rest of the building down. But what we see then is that's when the larger explosions are heard, and then they're very visible, and they're hurling 4-ton structural steel sections laterally at 60 miles an hour, laterally out of the towers, landing 600 feet away from the towers in every direction. This is a massive explosive force hurling thousands of these heavy steel sections from the perimeter structure of this building. And remember, how does gravity work? We're told this is a gravitational collapse, basically, like a pancaking collapse. Well, gravity works down, not out. And this is incredible evidence. We also see simultaneously in midair the pulverization of each of these floors with these synchronistically timed explosives described very carefully by these first responders. Pop, pop, pop. And all the way around the building, like a belt, all these kind of quotes, like firecracker, like they were trying to take down a building with a detonation, one of them says. So this is incredible because we would expect to see a pile of floors, like 110 of them, each the size of a football field, stacked up at the bottom, but they're not there. They're missing. We're talking about 90,000 tons of concrete pulverized to a fine powder before it ever reaches the bottom. And that powder is strewn over lower Manhattan in a 3-square-mile area. And it's a very, very fine powder, like 100 microns is the average particle size.
The incredible power that it took. They talk about melting, but this is pulverization and atomization, an astonishing thing, a very high energy thing.
Amazing explosive force to accommodate that. And you have those explosions are traveling in our video down the face of the building at near free fall acceleration. So once again, almost as fast as the freely falling structural steel sections is these thousands of explosives you can see very clearly in the videos, as such that the entire structure is shattered all the way down to the ground. I mean, it is amazing, and that all happens without hesitation. It's accelerating straight down through what was the path of greatest resistance, the structural steel columns that were 5 times stronger than they needed to be to hold up the building also. And all of a sudden, they've given away suddenly and symmetrically and at near free fall. It's incredible, releasing these highly pyroclastic-like clouds, extremely hot, volatile, which is responsible for causing the noodling shapes of all of these structural steel sections, many of them. That takes incredible heat, and that heat is evidenced by these cauliflower-like shaped clouds, which are indicative of high-temperature incendiaries and or explosives. Certainly incendiaries we have evidence for, actually, in all the dust. And incendiaries work by heat. We're talking 4,000-degree heat that the incendiary thermite.
I want you to talk about the temperatures in just a second. I need to say that it's 9:32 Pacific time. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I'm speaking with Richard Gage, AIA, who is systematically destroying, with physical evidence, the official story of the collapse of the three buildings in New York on the 11th of September, 2001. Could I interrupt you just for a moment, and let's bring up some temperatures. The maximum office temperature was of a fire in an office could be maybe 1,800 degrees at the extreme limit. Isn't that correct?
Oh, that's highly extreme. These office fires were basically going out at the time of the collapse of each of these buildings, particularly in the South Tower, and they're probably only 400 or 500 degrees.
But structural steel melts at 2,700 degrees or about, and it's pulverized and atomized at I don't know what. Maybe you could tell me, but it's way, way, way above that.
Well, yeah, and there's plenty of evidence that this steel was melted, and evidence of molten iron. See, that's the problem. The official story doesn't say that the steel was melted. They say that it's softened. And then weakened, and steel can do that, loses half of its strength at 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit.
But I do remember seeing the videos of the glowing, flowing rivers of steel at the bottom slag.
And this is seen by first responders, structural engineers, and iron workers all independently. And it's photographed and videoed pouring out of the South Tower. In fact, at the point of jet plane impacts is this bright yellow, liquid, hot, glowing, molten metal, which can only be iron or steel because of its temperature and its color. Its temperature is given away by its color. NIST says, NIST is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, by the way, who was tasked by Congress to explain these collapses to the American people. And they say, that must be melted airplane. Well, molten aluminum looks silvery in daylight conditions. It doesn't look like this. So here's the evidence of thermite, an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. Also evidence of thermite in the like you said, pools. They said flowing like lava from the down the channel rails. A group of first responders, firefighters discuss. And this material, molten iron, elemental molten iron, is found in the billions of droplets of previously molten iron found in all the World Trade Center dust samples by the USGS, by R.J. Lee, an environmental consulting firm doing toxicological studies. They very carefully document this. In fact, up to 6% of some of these samples are composed of molten iron.
The microscopy is really something to look at, and that is something that you bring up in your film.
But, yeah, and they can't explain it. They don't even try to explain. They just say, it's not even World Trade Center dust. It's a signature element unless it has these unexplained molten iron droplets. It's incredible. And yet, what produces molten iron droplets? They just won't go there in their theory of destruction by fire. They say, we found no evidence for explosives. Well, did you look? They were asked, and they finally write back and say, no, we didn't look for evidence of explosives. It's incredible. In this case, incendiaries, which work by heat, again, 4,000-degree heat, is very capable of not only melting steel, but releasing molten iron as its byproduct in the incendiary process that produces this 4,000-degree heat, which is the only thing that can explain all the phenomena that we're talking about. As a matter of fact, also in the dust, a small team of scientists led by Niels Harrit in Copenhagen find in all of their independently collected samples, four samples, and they find the same curious red-gray chips up to a 16th of an inch large, most of them are, and they look like paint. But they do a series of tests and find in electron microscope, for instance, 50,000 times they zoom in and they find extremely small particles of iron oxide and aluminum powder, the ingredients of thermite. But these are in particles that are 1,000 times smaller than the diameter of a human hair. This is highly engineered material.
Really, really highly engineered, especially for 2001. And you're talking about hexagonally shaped nanoparticle constructed thermite, and an incredible and at that time only recently invented material that can zip through iron as if it were butter.
Oh yeah, and these small chips they like you said, it's been made. It's called super thermite. Because of the small size, there's a massive surface to nanoparticles, and the chemical reaction is instantaneous. And for that reason, it's more explosive. So this incendiary is engineered to be explosive also because it's set in an organic bed of oxygen, silica, and carbon. So they've found what it really is and can only be nanothermite. This material is apparently applied in a fluid, which could likely have been applied certainly during the fireproofing, that retrofit that was going on the months prior to 9/11. Actually, as documented by Kevin Ryan in his peer-reviewed paper on the Journal of 9/11 Studies.com, he notes that these fireproofing retrofits were going on the floors above and below the points of jet plane impact for each, respectively, for each of the towers, the north and the south tower.
For months, up the elevator columns.
Huh?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, in the elevators, that's an extraordinary piece, because people say, well, how could you get, you know, this material? We're talking about at least 10 tons of very sophisticated incendiaries here, and probably high-energy explosives as well. How could you get it through security? Well, yeah, you'd certainly have to have the work of security here, wouldn't you? Which, of course, raises the specter that this probably wasn't Al-Qaeda. We're probably talking some sort of an inside operation. We certainly want
Securicom,
the security company.
Securicom and Ace Elevator.
Ace Elevator, that's right.
And Ace Elevator is very much a fly-by-night operation, which has since disappeared.
They came out of nowhere to get this contract. They didn't have the reputation, the size, the performance history that Otis Elevator did. Otis was the one that the company maintaining these elevators for the life of this building. So, we want an investigation of them, because that would have given access to the core columns and beams in the building, which are adjacent to the elevators. And indeed, we have complaints throughout the building by the tenants of all this white powder that kept getting on their desks every morning. And what would that be? Well, that would be, or could be, the gypsum board elevator hoistway enclosure, which is a fireproofing material that they would have had to have cut through to access from the elevator shafts all of these columns. So we have a speculation that Ace Elevator may have been involved, but we don't know. We certainly need an investigation.
That's the thing. I mean, that's your whole thing. It's like, we need to investigate. Where's the investigation? Where's the investigation of LVI Services doing the asbestos removal project for months?
Yes, there was all kinds of projects going on in this building. LVI is certainly a target of investigation, as well as Turner Construction, Ace Elevator, the security company, and other tenants, particularly those where the actual planes hit, had a lot of curious activity that we would certainly want to investigate.
It's an amazing story when you actually look at what happened and what evidence is available, and that is the true value of turning to this film. As you were saying, Richard Gage, it is available online for anyone to see. And you will be presenting it Saturday night at Portland State University Lincoln Hall at 7 p.m. But you can find it at ae911truth.org, or, as you say, by going to YouTube and looking up. What search indices would you recommend?
I would search for AE911 Truth, AE911 Truth. The website, again, is AE911truth.org. My last name, Gage, that'll bring it up, 9/11 Portland. That'll bring it up, and there is a local website for the group. Do you have it there, Teresa?
Local website for the group?
Here it is, Portland AE911Truth. Oh, that's the website. That's the email. PortlandAE911Truth@yahoo.com.
Okay, Portland. And I just put AE911Truth into the search bar for YouTube, and it came up with 9/11 Explosive Evidence. Experts Speak Out. Free one-hour version.
Yep, that's been seen by 1 million people, and we need about 100 million people to see that, and then we will clearly be past the point of critical mass, because we are up against a very, very, very well manipulated populace and manipulated media industry and manipulated government, that where we don't have spokespersons, not one in the government, not one candidate for president is talking about getting a new investigation.
It's still too toxic. And I recall how it went through various phases, for example, to finally debunk the Warren Commission report. And at some point, you know, decades ago now, we got to the point where, okay, we were having some real investigation. And now it's back to the point. At one point, the American people agreed, okay, there was much more going on than a single shooter. And now the official propaganda has, its weight has taken over again, and that's just how propaganda works.
And it apparently works very, very well. I this is the part that shocked me. I could not live in a society where almost all of my friends found out, I turned out some of them already knew about this after I talked to them, but they just didn't talk to me because this is not something you talk about. We were all placed in a state of shock.
That's
and
it.
Awe on that day. It's a psychological operation against the American people, which I was certainly a victim of, because prior to this, I'm a flag waving Reagan Republican. I mean, that was me, and I was for the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I was for Colin Powell going to the United Nations presenting his indisputable case of weapons of mass destruction against Iraq and how they needed to be taken down because they had ties to Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden. And I mean, just imagine how my world got turned upside down. Not that I'm a flag-waving liberal or anything. I don't trust anything I see on the mainstream media anymore. Turns out, why didn't we hear, by the way, on the mainstream media anything about alternative theories other than to call us conspiracy theorists, which is their favorite thing to do? Well, you mentioned Project Censored at the beginning of the program.
Yes.
This is an incredible media critic think tank out of Sonoma State College in a university in California. They have found that 90% of the mainstream media in our country is owned by just 6 corporations. But they go farther than that. They found that those 6 corporations are owned and operated by the same people who own and operate the corporations in the arms industry, the oil industry, the banking industry, the insurance industry, all of whom profited enormously from 9/11. So we need a massive investigation, not just of these towers and not just of the overall perpetration and events of 9/11, those who profited the most and who have the most to gain and who's controlling the media that in turn controls our minds.
Could you speak about the rapid removal of evidence? And you might want to, if you want, expand that to the event at the Pentagon as well, which is particularly bizarre for a plane crash because, as you know, instead of going out and tagging every piece of debris, as in a normal plane crash investigation, the debris was rapidly scooped up. And well, I'll let you tell the story.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, just right there. And by the way, the removal of evidence and the cover up of a crime. This is the illegal destruction of evidence in a crime scene. I mean, this crime scene started 2 major wars. Over a couple of million people have been killed, 7,000 U.S. soldiers. If there's any question about what happened on 9/11, we have to go after it with vengeance, not vengeance, with great intensity and focus and fearlessness about where the chips may fall, because we've also legislated away our civil liberties through the Patriot Act, the Military Commissions Act, the 9/11, the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012.
We've accepted totalitarianism because of this narrative, this lying narrative.
We can be arrested. We can be arrested, held indefinitely, without charge and without a right to a lawyer or a trial. We can be even tortured and even assassinated, American citizens, for merely being associated with terrorism outside of any court of law. That's not what our forefathers fought for. And so let's find out why they were able to take 200,000 tons of structural steel from the World Trade Center, the worst structural failures ever in the history of mankind, and ship them to China for recycling, starting just weeks after 9/11.
A gigantic operation, truck after truck after truck, removing the evidence from the scene, shipping it out of the country to be melted down and hidden forever.
400 truckloads a day, and basically given away pennies a few dollars per ton of this material. It's a crime in and of itself. In fact, the investigators from the American Society of Civil Engineers, the volunteers who came together to investigate this, were crying out, saying, "Hey, we don't have access to the site, we don't have access to the drawings, and we don't have access to the steel, which would tell us how those buildings came down." Well, what did they find in the FEMA report in May of 2002, and documented very carefully? FEMA did in Appendix C. They found the high temperature corrosion attack on the steel, molten iron invading the steel, sulfur corrosion. Sulfur is added to thermite to become thermate, much more effective at cutting through steel. Its author, Jonathan Barnett, said that the ends of the beams in Building 7, he's referring to in this case, were partially evaporated. Now that takes 4,000 degrees to evaporate steel. Where does that come from in normal office fires, the cause of this building's failure?
Well, and the fairy tales that they try to present to explain this, one of them is brought up in your film that jet fuel blowing down the elevator shafts somehow was responsible for this incredible pulverizing detonation of floor after floor.
Well, some people suggest that, and there were also huge explosions in the lobby, which destroyed the lobby and killed lots and lots of people who were exiting through that lobby, and they say, that was burning jet fuel. Well, even NIST claims that 90% of the jet fuel burned up outside the building. The rest of it, was burned up in 10 minutes.
And if that was jet fuel blowing around and burning, it certainly didn't bother to toast the potted plants there.
That's right. We don't see evidence of black sooty residue that would be left behind it's basically kerosene. You know how dirty kerosene burns.
Those plants look downright healthy in the video.
Pardon?
Those plants look downright healthy in the video. Hi, I'm a healthy, happy fern. Nothing to see here.
Yeah, and yet all of the half-inch thick glass in the lobby, most of it was blown out. So all around. So it was an incredible force going on there. And the jet fuel can't fall down the elevator shafts, only one of which had any connection from the top down 1,300 feet down to the bottom. So it's just extremely unlikely that the fuel would atomize enough on its way down to even become explosive. Jet fuel is not explosive. It's just kerosene. And by the way, that kerosene only burns as hot as desks or chairs. It doesn't burn in open air any hotter than that. So there's nothing magical about jet fuel. That's a common myth that people have.
Well, and it's contradictory in another way, too. I mean, how could the jet plane fly burning jet fuel out of its engines? Why wouldn't they melt also? I mean, it's just these temperatures that of the effects are wildly different. And what I like about the film and about AE 9/11 Truth is that you just bring out these basic physical facts, which are in stark contradiction, which are in incontrovertible contradiction to the official story. They show it to be the fairy tale that it is. And there's a couple of things that now there's the pressure of history preventing people from looking at this. But there's also the intimidation of realizing that so much has been predicated on these lies. It's embarrassing to turn around and say that you've been wrong all this time. It takes courage, and I do encourage people to take the courage to turn it around. I went on for a couple of years and say, well, I don't know, it doesn't matter. And I would say things like, well, what's the, this is ridiculous now, but I would say, well, what's the burning temperature of human fat and pulverized aluminum and you know, at that speed and blah, blah. And I started actually looking into it on those bases, you know, trying to find out what bizarre thing could have possibly made airplanes cause buildings to fall down. And as I was saying before, it counts on the propaganda counts on a very human fallacy, something that is very easy to fall into. For example, if I loan my car to you and my car breaks down, you come back to me and you say, well, I borrowed your car, but it broke down. I say, you broke my car. No, I didn't keep the alternator in repair. So the next person who was going to drive the car, it was going to break down. That's the post hoc, ergo propter hoc fallacy. And that translates as after this, therefore, because of this fallacy. It's a very easy thing to do. And so what you're presented with is these planes go slamming into the building. Something happens, this, and you say, well, after this, the buildings collapse. So it must be because of the airplanes. That is the desired effect. It is not logical.
It's a magic show.
Yes.
It's a massive deception and illusion. We're meant to focus on the planes and the massive explosion of jet fuel. In fact, they show that far more than they ever show the buildings coming down. Because actually, if you watch these buildings coming down, because the explosions start at the point of jet plane impacts, also an hour later or so, when the fires are burning out, in the case of the South Tower, almost completely burned out, these explosions start, which are so very visible. In the case of the South Tower, these squibs or isolated explosive ejections are occurring multiple floors at once, jumping out of the towers, and then in each of the towers up to 60 stories below, 40 stories, 20 stories below this zone of destruction, you can easily see these explosions in the videos. And you're going, well, wait, what's causing those? Well, NIST has an answer for that, too. They say, well, this is puffs of air being produced by this massive pile driver, the 15-story section in the case of the North Tower, driving the building down, pushing that air. Well, that, first of all, these are pulverized building solids that are being blown out of these buildings in these so-called puffs of air. They occur at geometrically precise locations, indicating that it's much more likely a patterned sequence, although perhaps mistimed because they're going off well ahead of their designated sequence. And even so, if let's realize that the Twin Towers had open office planning on most of their floors, meaning that the engineering innovation in these towers allowed for 60 feet wide open office areas by 100, 200 feet long. And these areas, if the elevator shafts were being compressed with air and that air came out at these floors, they would blow out all these windows at once if they blew out any of them, not these highly focalized, pinpoint accurate, violent ejections. So it just doesn't make any sense, the explanations that we get from NIST.
AE911truth.org is the website. And again, we see that if we look at the actual evidence, if we turn to the actual experts, the architects and engineers, and we take a sober eye to what is known, what can be observed, what can be detected, the official story is bunk. Richard Gage, AIA, is going to be presenting this evidence Saturday at PSU Lincoln Hall, 7 p.m. Richard Gage, AIA, I'd like to thank you very much for joining me today on Press Watch on KBOO Portland.
Thank you, Teresa. We'll see you at the event.
All right. You've been listening to Press Watch. Stay tuned to KBOO for more Dynamite Broadcasting. And we're going out to you via KBOO 90.7 FM on that beautiful red and white Eiffel Tower on the West Hills. Other frequencies elsewhere in Cascadia and all around the world on KBOO.FM. In that manner, we're going out to all the ships at sea.
Wow, a very fast hour on KBOO Portland. Judging from the amount of calls, we got a lot of interest on the upcoming Richard Gage presentation. More information on that momentarily here on The Boo. Also coming up this morning at 10:15, about 15 minutes from now, we'll have Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And then at 11 on KBOO, Between the Covers with host David Naiman. Today speaking with award-winning author Brian Evanson about his new collection of stories, A Collapse of Horses. But first, it's Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And that is coming up next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the film screening of Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths on Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center in Portland. The film will be introduced by Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. There will also be a Q&A session after the film. Again, that's a screening of the film, Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths with Richard Gage, Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center, 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to broadcast locally to Portland, Corvallis, Hood River, and everywhere in between. But what if you're too far away to listen to KBOO on the radio? Never fear, there are many ways to connect to KBOO, no matter where you are, by listening online. KBOO offers two